It's only 1 week now till polling day, and cost of living and hip pocket issues have been taking centre stage. What's been drawn into stark relief, I think, is that stubbornly low wage growth is a real problem for many Australians who are now struggling with rising inflation and, of course, the sky-high housing prices. And it's thrown more light on something barely mentioned, either during or before the campaign, that our tax system disproportionately taxes citizens' labour, less so their assets. And that's leaving young people, who are basically not the beneficiaries of asset growth, in a particularly tight spot. Well, one person who's committed to improving the financial lot of young people, and I might add others, and who's joining with those calling for more focus on this labour assets trade-off, is Jessica Irvine. She's a senior economics writer with the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, widely followed in her columns, which she's fleshed out into a new book, Your Ultimate Guide to Household Budgeting, Money with Jess. I'm very pleased to welcome her now. Hello there.
It's lovely to be with you.
Look, your book is really a practical guide to budgeting, that thing that, you know, it's a funny old word that isn't, it's a bit like duty, it's not mentioned a lot these days. And you're aiming to teach people, particularly young people, I think, how to beat the rising cost of living with what you call hacks. Now, what prompted you to step outside your main day job and do this?
Yeah, look, I was reflecting in the book. I've just covered my 18th federal budget as a journalist, as an economics journalist. But behind the scenes, I'm sort of like the dentist who has bad teeth. You know, I had never sort of taken much control of my own financial life in terms of having my own household budget. In fact, I just didn't know that that was a thing that people do. And one of the delights of writing the book is that there's all these people coming out of the woodwork saying, yes, I've got a spreadsheet I've kept for a decade and I know exactly how much I've spent. This was all a revelation to me, and I bought my first home. I feel fortunate to have been able to do that about 2 years ago, and took on a massive mortgage. And about that point, I had to get really serious about, you know, reining in the spending, making sure that I could meet those mortgage repayments, which has come into even sharper relief now that interest rates are going up. So I had to really, you know, figure all this stuff out for myself, and then I really want to share that knowledge with as many people as I can, because it's been so helpful.
Well, yes, I mean, you make quite a point. I suppose we should just answer that question though. What are these hacks that you talk about?
Well, I'm very sensitive about selling a book about personal finance and asking people to pay money for the cover price to buy it. So I wanted to make sure that if people sort of didn't want to follow my whole budgeting system, you'd at least have 300 plus money saving hacks and the little tips in the book about just various ways to either increase your income, or they're mostly about cutting back your spending. And a lot of it is sort of old wisdom, like, you know, put on a jumper, don't turn on the heater, you know, wash your clothes in cold cycle washing. But I think it's a legacy of information that perhaps my grandma knew and my mum knew, but seems to maybe have got lost somewhere in the sort of abundance that many young people do enjoy. Just some of those more frugal, the return of frugal.
Well, that was the word I was just about. Does it feel frugal, and is that sort of a turn off? You know, some that it just sounds very, I don't know, mid 20th century or something.
I think it's been reinvented these days as minimalism, which is, you know, in the increasing sort of frenetic life that we lead, I think there is a resonance with young people to sort of want to pare things down and stop the crazy spending track that they're on. It's so easy to spend money these days as a young person. There's Afterpay, you know, all those sorts of ways to get you into debt. And I think we do need to be telling the kids and, you know, and myself as a 40-year-old that you can come back and you can be more comfortable if you're not sort of constantly upping the spending.
And the point you make is that the research does genuinely show that financial control in people's lives is what matters most, not necessarily their salary. And I don't think that's really put around. I mean, I know, remembering from my Life Matters days, inability to control your money was a major cause of depression, most under-recognised.
Yes, and more important than what your actual income is, I mean, living in poverty is not good for anyone's life satisfaction, but when I looked at the Australian Unity Wellbeing Index, which has been running for ages, they've got three things which really determine your overall wellbeing. It's a golden triangle of happiness, and yes, financial control is the third point that relates to money, not how much money you've got, financial control, personal relationships, and a sense of purpose. But yeah, it's that sense of being in control of whatever money that you do have, and particularly for women. I mean, I've written the book for everyone, but particularly for young women, you know, entering relationships and exiting relationships, I do think it's so important that young women are in control of where their money's coming from and where it's going.
Do you think you know, are you a happier person for doing all of this disciplined work, which I'll flesh out in a moment?
I am. And, you know, I'm a very keen tracker of my spending, and some people sort of see that and go, oh, that sounds stressful. But for me, it's the opposite. I just take small daily steps to monitor where my money's going, and I have all this bank of knowledge to know, well, if I spend that, that's half my weekly food budget, and I can make better decisions because I know what a dollar is worth to me, because I know, you know, how much things cost.
I started following you when you were doing your columns, which was the precursor to the book, in the Sun Herald, and I drew it all up, I have to tell you, Jessica, but I can't stick to it. It's not your fault, it's all about me, but it's just that the business of discipline, that the sense of small steps, and is hard. You think no, that won't be sufficient.
I love hearing that. Did you do it by hand or with a spreadsheet?
I did it. My son helped me with a spreadsheet.
Yeah, so this is a major thing for me. I do it all by hand, and because I do spreadsheets for work, but I feel like any work you do is on a computer, and it just doesn't appeal to me. But I have this system of writing everything out by hand, and it sort of feels, and then I highlight it with different coloured highlighters, and it's sort of like adult colouring in books or something. It's a meditative process that I do, and it's what I write about in the book, and I advocate people at least giving it a go.
This is what I would like to come to now. What is on offer for younger Australians in this election? Now, you've been writing about it, and you were just commenting that there was the debate, the first debate, this was the Channel 9 one, or second debate, you know, after the Sky, and that it really there was so little for young people to actually think mattered to them. Now, clearly that made you really quite indignant.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have let my son watch it, and I just worried about parents or young people who did tune into that debate. Just, I mean, the nature of it, the tone of it was so sort of angry and shouty. There was very little talk about climate change, which I didn't write too much in the piece, but just this sort of the raw deal that younger generations are getting, and it's not all about avocado on toast. The housing affordability having gone up, the tax burden creeping up on incomes, you know, working age young Australians are paying higher taxes on the income because we refuse to do a generational bargain and say, actually, we should be taxing assets more heavily, people who have benefited from past increases in their wealth thanks to just rising share and property prices, and that younger people are having a harder time making that leap from being a salary earner to being an asset owner. There's just a huge conversation, and Labor did try to have that conversation at the last election with changes to capital gains tax and negative gearing. They've backed away from that, and really there's little on offer from the parties in the way of vision as to what's going to put our national finances on a sustainable footing whilst also sort of making it fairer for younger generations. So, yes, I was a bit dismayed by that one.
Well, I mean, last week I quoted Ian Macfarlane, the former Reserve Bank chief, saying he wondered why it wasn't a bigger issue with young people, and that, in fact, we do tax labour, L-A-B-O-U-R, and yep, we don't tax assets, and the older people are gathering the assets. And then there's this devastating line in your article. Despite the fact that households headed up by a person aged 25 to 34 were the only age group in society to suffer a decline in their household income between 9-10 and 15-16, according to the Productivity Commission, they were also the only age cohort in the history of the survey, dating back to 1988, to ever suffer such a decline. Now, that just clearly isn't cutting through.
That's an extraordinary set of facts, yes, that was in a Productivity Commission report that I dug out from a few years back. And yes, the notion that every generation should live better than the last is not necessarily one that we are living for younger people today. And I think the quote from Ian McFarlane is that young people should be squealing about it. Mm. I don't know if it's squealing or yelling or taking to the streets. Yeah, I think young people are just genuinely a bit overwhelmed. This, you know, it is such a tough picture that, and I write about this in the book, the sort of overwhelm that young people feel about money, thinking I'll never be able to afford a house, the age pension is going to disappear and I'll be destitute in retirement. I do try to strip back some of that, you know, some of those thoughts that young people are having about money and try to offer some, you know, the age pension will be around.
What are the proposals you might make to improve the arrangement for young people?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a constant debate about whether it's housing demand or housing supply, which is a bit facile. I think it's both. I think we could be building more houses, but I think we do have to address that demand side of the equation. So what Labor was trying to do sort of and take some of the heat out of housing as an asset class for investors. So a house should be a home, and we shouldn't have as many investors looking to park their money in housing. It's not a socially very productive thing for investors to do. There's other things they can invest. They can invest in companies or starting companies or investing in the share market. I think we do need to make those tax concessions less attractive. Negative gearing is a bit harder now that interest rates are lower. It's actually harder to negatively gear. But the capital gains tax, you know, that 50% discount, I think we could be looking at removing that, or even like a cap on the number of homes you can own to get that, like cap it at maybe everyone's allowed to have one investment property, just not 10, that you would still get those tax breaks. So that's what I would do. It's been, you know, so disappointing to see Labor try to do that and then back away from that. Their feeling was that it was incredibly unpopular, but I don't think it was. I think doing something about housing affordability is electorally popular.
Well, we'll see, I suppose. Now, just finally, a lot of discussion this week about how to boost wages in the face of rising inflation and cost of living expenses. What do you see as the best solutions to this problem?
Well, it's something that is slowly, it's sort of, you know, a market to adjust people's expectations. There's a lot of talk about the minimum wage and possibly having a supersized or, you know, in comparison to previous years, increase in there delivered by the Fair Work Commission. That can help to sort of anchor expectations across the economy. But it is the case that workers should expect to be compensated for the rising cost of living plus any extra productivity they've brought to the table. Historically, that's been what has happened. They're having a pretty hard time getting that out of employers, but that is beginning to change. And the Reserve Bank itself says that, you know, we're seeing more companies giving 3% or even 4% pay rises. And that is the result of having a very, very low, historically low unemployment rate. So it will adjust, but it, you know, it's a bit of a slow process of workers asking for more and then employers sort of realizing that they have to give it. But certainly on all predictions, we will be getting pay rises that don't match inflation in aggregate for the next year or two. So that's going to be tough on budgets.
Indeed. Well, Jessica Irvine, if you draw yours up, you'll at least know where you are. So thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Jessica Irvine is a senior economics writer with the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, and her new book is called Your Ultimate Guide to Household Budgeting, Money with Jess. It's published by Wiley, and I must say it's provoked some very interesting responses from you. David Wade in Canberra said an older person could use a multi-column analysis sheet, as used to be used by bookkeepers. I think he means me. Good morning, Geraldine. I know the ABC can't advertise, but please follow this discussion with Scott Pape and Barefoot Investor. Scott's literally saved thousands of people from crippling debt, and he's also working hard to have children in school taught basic financial literacy, and that's from Sandra. And this lovely one from Maria in Canberra, my father-in-law, a hard-working migrant, would always say, I don't want to know how much you earn, I want to know how much you save. And one listener said, I dropped the budget when I paid off the mortgage in 2008.